that these athletes actually provide lasting memories and moments for the community. And you can't put a price on those family moments. So I realized at that moment when we were on the way to the Super Bowl, you know, how unified we were making Chicago. The athletes, they deserve every penny they get. Not only are they putting their bodies on the line every Sunday, but they're bringing communities together and they're making lasting memories. And you can't put a price tag on that. I think that was my defining moment, and it helped me kind of just realize why I get paid the way I was getting paid, and I'm just happy that I've experienced this throughout my life.
Welcome to Self Equity, the podcast that dives into the inspiring journeys of founders, entrepreneurs, athletes, and entertainers. I'm your host, Jolene Tepedino, authorized officer and team business manager for the Zellniger, Dorfman, Carr, and Heritage Group at UBS. Today on the Self Equity Podcast, we're joined by Adewale Ogunleye, former Pro Bowl NFL defensive end, Indiana University legend, and now a financial educator to professional athletes. Wale knows the game from both sides, the pressure of performing on the field and the challenge of protecting your future off of it. His mission today is simple: help athletes build real wealth, real identity, and real stability beyond the league. Joining me as co-host today is Jordan Zellniger, Wealth Strategy Associate for the Zellniger, Dorfman, Carr, and Heritage Group. Wale, welcome to the Self Equity Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited. Hope you guys take it easy on me. I really do.
We'll do our best. All right, Wale, you were part of one of the most memorable eras of Indiana football, recently being named honorary captain at the championship game. What did that recognition mean to you personally, and what stood out to you about this team that made it championship caliber?
Well, you see, I guess I wore the right shirt. I didn't know y'all were going to start off with that, with the Indiana reference. But now I meant a lot. I think, you know, to be even in each stadium as they continue to win towards the end of bowl games. And, you know, I went to the Rose Bowl, I went to the Peach Bowl in Atlanta, and then to end with a national championship was amazing. And then to get the call from the AD that, you know, we're going to ask you to be honorary captain. It's like a full circle moment for me. You know, I played in Indiana and, you know, I played extremely well. I didn't have the best teams. I actually stayed my senior year because, I was going to get a better, you know, position in the draft. And then also I wanted to leave a legacy at Indiana. God had other plans. I wind up tearing my ACL my senior year in college. I went undrafted. So coming back that senior year, you're almost regretting, like, should I have come back? Should I have gone to the draft? So to have that full circle moment that the school is like, listen, we appreciate everything that you've done for Indiana. We appreciate the sacrifice of you coming back a year and then actually getting hurt. And it all worked out, because when I got that call that I could, you know, go out there for the coin toss and be the honorary captain, for me, just surreal. And being a part of an undefeated season at Indiana, which I think if you would have given me 1,000 bets, I would have not had bet that Indiana would go undefeated and win a national championship. So I just wanted a decent team. But for a team to actually win a national championship was surreal.
I want to take a step back, you know, before you got into helping athletes towards their financial future. You mentioned you got injured senior year of college, then going undrafted. Going through all that, what kind of drove you to continue, you know, competing in the NFL and ultimately having a very successful career in the NFL?
You know, I just felt like I'm a New York City kid born from two immigrant parents from Nigeria. I had my degree already, and, you know, playing professional football wasn't always my dream. My dream was to become like a lawyer or something like that. But as I gotten better in playing sports, it became a dream of mine. Right. I wanted to actually, you know, lace them up in the NFL and be on TV. And, you know, so I can say, like, hi, mom, you know, in front of the camera and my family. I think that drive to eventually, you know, rehab and get back on the field was in me. And I'm very competitive, whatever it is that I get involved in. And once I got injured, the competitive juices actually went into overdrive. I attacked my rehabilitation as hard as I could. Got another setback. After my surgery, I got a staph infection, which pulled back my ability to get ready for the draft. But still, that didn't deter me from pushing forward. And I knew the person I was. I knew how good of a player I was. I just hoped that I was going to get healthy enough and someone was going to give me the chance to show my talents. And, you know, luckily I signed with the Miami Dolphins, and the rest is history. I turned it into an 11-year career, played in Pro Bowl and played in the Super Bowl, and was captain of, you know, a lot of the teams that I played on, and made a decent amount of money in 11 years. And so it all worked out at the end. But I think my determination to make my dream of being an NFL player, that determination turned into reality.
Amazing. Us mere mortals, you know, we always watch the players that we love, right? Whatever sport it may be. And most recently, for myself, watching the Super Bowl, I'm always so amazed at the players and, you know, how calm they seem, how collected. Their adrenaline's pumping. You've got the halftime show, the people, the crowds, the lights, the whole bit. What is that like, Wale?
Oh, man, it's hard to explain. You know, it's it makes going to a game now as a civilian really like what am I doing, right? Except, you know, I'm on the other side of it, especially playing in the Super Bowl. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen like your presidential motorcade. Everywhere we went during the Super Bowl, it was like police escorts, presidential motorcade, like it's business time, right? So super exciting, knowing you got fans and, you know, fans of the opposing team booing you. All that stuff just mixes in and makes it just so special. And it's the biggest, you know, event in America, knowing everyone's watching, right? I think 130 million viewers watched the Super Bowl. That type of experience, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Unfortunately, I didn't win my turn at Super Bowl, so I kind of have a sour taste in my mouth about that game. But to play in it was just an honor. It is a dream come true because it's just a big party for everybody. But you're on the field, you know, trying to handle your business, and everybody's just having a good time drinking and enjoying everything. And you see all the stars and the celebrities, and it's a great time.
From a financial perspective, while we're on the topic of the Super Bowl, I think a lot of, you know, regular people ask all the time, you know, how do the players get a lot of extra money when they make the Super Bowl? How does compensation around playoffs work? Can you share a little bit about your experience, you know, being a player and working with professional athletes around that?
Yeah, so obviously you get paid a salary, so you get paid for the, you know, the 17 games that you have, and that's your salary. And then for every game that you advance to, you get a little bit of a bonus. Okay, so if you're really an established player, it's a big pay cut, right? It's nothing compared to what you're getting during the regular season, and everyone's making the same amount. So whether you're a star quarterback or you're the backup kicker, you're all getting the same amount for every playoff game. And actually, those amounts go up each round until you win the Super Bowl, you know, you get a bigger bonus there. That being said, you know, you don't hear a lot of the athletes, you know, complaining that it's a pay cut, because you're living out your dreams and trying to get to a Super Bowl. And a lot of these guys, if they had to, they would probably play in the playoffs for free, because it's just how special that atmosphere is, and getting the ability to raise the Lombardi Trophy and see the confetti of the color of your favorite team in the air. And I know a lot of guys would probably, you know, trade that in for just some cleats just to do it, you know.
If they don't want to do it for free, I will.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, looking back, what was the defining moment of your NFL career? The moment that changed how you saw yourself as a player or as a leader?
My defining moment was probably a whole season. I think the year we went to the Super Bowl, 2 years before, I had gotten traded from the Miami Dolphins to Chicago Bears. And at that time, it was the biggest contract for restricted free agent in NFL history. And coming from humble beginnings in New York City, and parents who I think maybe even at the time probably still were maybe just finished paying off their student loans, and I signed this huge contract I felt a sense of guilt. Like, you know, what am I doing so special that God's allowed me to sign a contract for 6 years and all these millions of dollars where, you know, I think school teachers and firemen and police officers and people that I think do really meaningful jobs for the community, they don't get paid anywhere near what an athlete gets paid. So I had a really hard time understanding why I got all this money in my pocket. And I think this is another reason why I think athletes get in trouble with their finances, because there is a sense of guilt there. And that sense of guilt can manifest itself in so many different ways of spending it on trips and gifts and bags and giving money to everybody and their ideas and opening up businesses for their family members. And before you know it, they've gone broke by helping people out. And I do think that it is the job of financial advisors to help their clients figure out a way to give back, to handle this guilt in a way that's constructive and create a plan for their clients that can last as long as they need the money to last and are able to still touch on some of the things that they touched on. So to go back to your question, going through that year and remember having that guilt, for the first time, I actually started looking into the stadium, into the crowd, and seeing, you know, Asian and Latinas and Blacks and whites and moms and dads and all from different communities together at each one of our games. And they all had one thing in common with that Bears hat on and or Bears jersey on. And there was no one talking politics or there wasn't anyone talking race and all these different things that are very divisive in religion in that stadium. At that time, you were either for the Bears or you were against the Bears. And that was unifying. And I realized at that moment when I saw, you know, moms and dads and brothers and sisters and dads and daughters all together, that these athletes actually provide lasting memories and moments for the community. And you can't put a price on those family moments. So I realized at that moment when we were on the way to the Super Bowl, you know, how unified we were making Chicago. The athletes, they deserve every penny they get. Not only are they putting their bodies on the line every Sunday, but they're bringing communities together and they're making lasting memories. And you can't put a price tag on that. I think that was my defining moment. And it helped me kind of just realize why I get paid the way I was getting paid. And I'm just happy that I've experienced this throughout my life.
It's a really interesting perspective, Wale, that you kind of took the time to look into that crowd and actually see what was going on, not just playing the game, not just making money, but the unification of people from everywhere. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are. You love the Bears. I love the Bears. You love my, I love my, like, mm-hmm. People coming together. And that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
I appreciate it. And Chicago's one of those cities where the fans are just fanatical, right? They love their sports fans. Like, it's almost crazy enough where the weather gets down to like negative whatever, and they go, you know, bananas because they love it. And I'm like, I am freezing my bones out. They're loving every moment of it. So it's a great city to play in. Miami was a great city too. But if I was to weigh, I'm going to make a lot of people angry with this one, but if I was to weigh, you know, sports towns, I think Chicago has a better environment for sports teams.
As long as you don't say it's better than New York.
I will not. Listen, I'm from New York, so, you know, deep down aside, you know, but, you know, the Chicago Bears, they buttered my bread, man. So I have to stay to those guys.
So you made a transition, you know, from playing in the game to joining UBS and leading up their athlete entertainer division. What made helping athletes focus on their financial future a passion for you? And what was the reason for that transition?
Well, first, it started off, after I got done playing, the NFL has an amazing program where they help with your continuing education. Or if you didn't graduate from your college, they'll, you know, help you, you know, finish your degree. But I had graduated, so I took advantage of the program to get my MBA. One, I was in a position where I just didn't understand my finances. I felt financial advisors, you know, they were speaking in language that I didn't understand. Like, the way financial business speak to each other, to their clients sometimes, it's like, there's no way you talk to your wife or to your best friend when you're home like this. There's just no way. But for some reason, when it came to our finances, the advisors are talking in all of these, you know, crazy terms. And one moment when I was always hearing this term, like, basis point, I hear it all the time. Like, you know, even when I was a rookie and I was like, we're going to charge you this amount of basis points and this is what the basis points is. I would just shake my head like, okay, basis point. I knew nothing of what that meant, right? And that's as basic of a fundamental term that you should know in finance. And I wondered why we didn't speak in just layman terms into where we can, you know, speak to anybody, whether they're 9 years old or 90 year old. That was my reason to get my MBA. But then that was also my reason that I think I wanted to have a place where I could sit and affirm that could help create content, create a platform, like a platform like this, like we're speaking to each other in real terms, like human beings. And we're not talking about investments, right? It's really talking about getting to know who your clients are, getting to know what's important to them, getting to know their backstory. And then at the end of the day, all that's going to come into play when it's time to decide, you know, what financial plan you're going to have. And I appreciate the way, you know, the firm that I work at approached their clients and the way that they looked at making sure that the advisors had real relationships and were not transactional. And this is a firm that's willing to take a former player who actually lived it and done it and gave him the keys to start this sports entertainment business. That says a lot for the firm. That says a lot for a company that listens, and it's been a win-win, you know. And I've been doing this now for 7 years, and we've been, you know, crushing it from a standpoint of understanding our clients and growing our business.
And I can say, you know, you and your team have been a tremendous resource and teammate to a lot of the advisors at the firm, because as you know, not every advisor is a good fit for this, right? You know, you need to be able to speak their language, understand what they went through. You know, we're fortunate to have an ex-MLB player as part of our team. And part of that I wanted to ask you is, how important is it for an athlete to work with someone who truly understands the culture of a locker room and the pressures of being in a professional league?
I think that's one of the biggest advantages of all time, right? Because too many times, I think people, not just financial advisors, but people tend to look at athletes through a lens of stereotypes and biases that they've learned from ESPN or TMZ. And I think having somebody in your team that's lived it, you understand that most athletes are just a microcosm of society. We're human beings the same way that, you know, my mom and my brother are human beings. We have anxieties. We worry about things. We get happy about the same things. We cry the same way. We get down. We might even have, you know, more issues when it comes to dealing with our finances and understanding how can we help people. So having somebody on your team that's lived it and has been through that locker room experience is probably the most valuable asset, I think, for a team to have, especially if you're working with people within this industry. And I think more importantly, too, in addition to that, is you guys aren't fans of, you're not a fan, right? You appreciate the work that these young men and women do on the field, on the diamond, on stage, but you're not afraid to say no. You're not afraid to push back. You're not yes men and yes women. And that's what the athletes need, right? They need someone who's actually going to hold their hands through the process. We do appreciate what our clients do. They're amazing at it. They're talented. But being fans actually kind of, you know, clouds judgment sometimes. And not saying we're not, you know, super excited about the fields and the amount of money that our clients make, but we understand that they really need our guidance. They need our steady hand, and they need someone to push back, especially when everyone's giving them everything that they need and are saying yes, yes, yes. Maybe it's okay if that your team has some people on board that understands that you maybe need to say no, or maybe not yet, right? And that actually gives us enough time to plan and help our clients through any difficult decisions they may have.
Well, I'm just thinking to that point, in a sense, you know, the pressure around players, right? This public persona. How do athletes, you know, separate their identity from the public persona or expectation?
That is such a profound question. And I think some of that is a part of the reason why I think athletes struggle when the lights are dimmed, right? And your 15 minutes of fame are up. The ones that can't find the ability to look past that they're not just a baseball player or they're not just a football player, those are the ones who struggle. Those are the ones who suffer high rates of divorce, of chemical dependency, right? Alcoholism, drug use, a high level of depression because their identity has only been, you know, in front of the camera as an athlete. So this is where I think this question that you ask is not only how do these athletes adapt, but who's helping them adapt? And I think this is where the financial advisors come into play and to getting them into a place where they start having these discussions earlier. No athlete wants to talk about retirement, but it is the skill set of a great advisor to start conversation like estate planning and making sure they have a will and what they want to do when they want to, you know, have a family. Do they ever want to get married if they're not married? And setting up those things, or maybe before they get married, setting up a prenuptial agreement. Those type of conversations lead to bigger conversations about life after sports or life after entertainment. So again, it's going to be hard for a lot of these young men and women to shed the costume or the uniform of being an athlete. But it is going to take a community and a village of advisors, especially the financial advisors, of helping our athletes transition into a world of professionalism. And knowing too that some of the skills that they've attached themselves to and actually created in the sports world, it's actually beneficial in the world of corporate America. And, you know, teamwork and being accountable and being on time and taking feedback well, right? Athletes have to be, you know, have to take constructive criticism really well. And those kind of things help them transition into their second life. I would also say too, even if you have a ton of money and have a big contract, a lot of these young men are going to retire and women are going to retire in their mid-30s. Is that really retirement age? Right. So the truth of the matter is we've got to do a better job of telling our athletes when it's all said and done in sports, it's not all said and done. Right. Life keeps moving. We've got to find what's next. And you also find a lot of these athletes, if they, you know, they've got the mindset, as soon as they pivot into something great, they're actually going to be super successful in that next field, too. Like an example of that myself is that I put my hard work and dedication that I've learned in the sports field and transitions to here at what I do at this firm. And we've been kicking butt for 7 years, right? And that's all the things that I've learned through sports and entertainment.
And that's the conversation that we have with especially young athletes all the time, is that they don't necessarily realize how short a professional career is, especially in the NFL where your body's taking such a toll. You know, when you're 16, 17 years old in today's world, you're getting NIL dollars, you think it's going to last forever. You know, the conversations that we're having are the athlete has a complete opposite earning period of the traditional professional who works in corporate America. They make their bulk of the wealth early in their career, whereas in traditional, you know, corporate America, you might make the bulk of your wealth, you know, between 40 and 60 years old. As an athlete, you're already retired at that point.
Yep.
So we work with them on, you know, capitalizing on their brand while they're in the spotlight, because the day it's over, somebody might not answer the phone the way they, you know, the way they did the day before.
No, you're right. I mean, you said the NFL, we joke about it, but the NFL in our book stands for not for long, right? That's not, all right. That's what it stands for. So, and that holds key to all of the leagues, right? You're not going to have, there's going to be one LeBron James, right, who's going to play over 20 years. Majority of these young men are going to play 4 or 5 years, and that's it. And then you're seeing that, you know, a lot of them are getting into financial uncertainty because they haven't planned. They thought in their minds they were going to play forever, but we know that's not possible. And, I mean, you know, you're going to have one out of every 1,000 athletes that plays a long career like Tom Brady or LeBron James, and thousands of others that are going to be super short, like a year or two. So Truth of the matter is you've got to plan regardless what scale you're on.
Yeah. I want to talk about the idea of sudden wealth. Athletes sign their first contract and then that money hits. What are the first financial concepts that you think they should be thinking about, especially as you work with young players in this era?
Education, number one. I think, you know, you've got to educate yourself. With that, that means you got to surround yourself with the right people. I mean, I said, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier. I think too many times people think just because athletes have money, and not the advisors, but people in their families, they just because they have money, they're experts at money. And they understand money. You know, the example that I'll have is I work out all the time, right? And I'm in the gym. I do, you know, the sauna, and I do the steam room, and I swim a little bit, but I lift, I do cardio. And someone comes up to me and says, hey, Wale, like, why don't you just open up your own gym? And I'm thinking to myself, like, why don't I open up my gym? Well, no, why? Because you don't know how to run a business, right? You don't know what a ledger is. You don't know how to do payroll. You don't know how to do HR. You don't know all the different parts of a real business that really means, that makes that business go. And I think too many times people think money is the answer to everyone's problem, and it's not true. Education, number one, helps most people. And I think from an educational standpoint, athletes need to sit down and do the math. There is a perception that there's not enough time in the day. But if you see the amount of PlayStation and Xbox that these guys play sometimes, you can't tell me you give me an hour a week to sit down and study your finances, right? So I push back on that narrative. And I think that's too also the fact that I played. So I can naturally push back. And when I hear athletes say there's not enough time in the day, I'm like, yo, I call BS on that, right? There is enough time in the day. And you're going to make enough time in the day to learn this. And eventually, you know, they'll come back and call me and say, hey, Wale, thank you. Or, hey, Wale, can we set up a time to go over with my finances? And you'll see that it's been doing the work. So the key for me, I think, is just education. And then more importantly, these athletes have to connect themselves to reputable institutions, right? At the end of the day, I want you to be able to get on social media and say, so-and-so is messing with my money. And I want that person on the other end, from a reputational standpoint, be able to say that I'm risking everything by you writing this bad review on social media. Too many athletes get with the moms and the pops and these small institutions that kind of don't have a big umbrella of compliance over them. I know compliance makes your life a little crazy, guys. I'm sorry. But when it comes to sports and entertainment, it's actually beneficial to have someone checking you and making sure that you're doing things the right way and that you're, you know, crossing your T's and dotting your I's. A lot of the advisors that a lot of athletes get into, which these guys get in trouble, they're dealing with these small advisors that don't understand wealth management. They get in a lot of trouble and they go bankrupt. And they close up shop, leave the state, and go open up shop somewhere and do it against somebody else, right? So yes. I think athletes have to educate themselves, but more importantly, they need to surround themselves with other people that have just as much to lose as they do.
Look, it goes back to someone giving you pushback or someone telling you no or someone just not letting you have free rein. You know, and I started this industry and yeah, you know, having to go back and forth and get it signed again or get it done the right way. Sure, it was frustrating, but then oath shows you no. My managers, my compliance, my supervisors, they have my back because it's not just with me. At the last stop, there's layers behind me and, you know, collectively everybody working together is for the same common purpose. So going back a little bit, that shift in the mindset, you know, players, right? You've started young, you started early and often. Think about your finances, think about your taxes, think about how you're going to plan the next phase of life, the next phase of your career before you even get there, right? And this is all very important and super crucial, but hey, Wale, let's have a little bit of fun, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me about one big ticket item that you bought when you made it, right? You gotta treat yourself. Everybody's gotta treat themselves. Yeah. LJ?
Yeah. Listen, I'm all for that. And I think you're right. You know, these young men and women have worked tirelessly hard to get to a place where they want to splurge a little bit, right? And they don't want to hear, No. Right. So the question then is like, all right, let's let you get that one thing off your chest. Right. For me, I'm actually a little bit embarrassed by it, but I bought this baby blue Bentley and I bought it cash, but I got like duped into buying it by the dealer. So when I walked into the dealership and the dealer was like, I don't know how he implied some way that I couldn't afford the car. And I was looking at him like, you know, you must not have seen the New York Times headline with me just signing his deal. So, but I think he probably really did, but he was kind of like goading me a little bit. And so I called my financial advisor at the time and I said, listen, I just want to make sure I'm about to buy this car. It was like $225,000 car. And I said, I'm about to buy it cash. If I buy it cash, am I going to be broke? And he laughed. He's like, nope, you're not going to be broke at all. You could buy it cash. And I was like, all right, I'm buying it cash. So I bought it. But the uneducated guy and the unbusiness savvy guy, I bought it from the dealer that was basically goading me into buying. I should have bought it from a whole different dealership and then brought it there to service or something and proved that I could buy it. But the guy that was kind of playing me got the commission. So that was my story of the one item that I bought. And then even crazier, at the time I lived in Florida, and I still do, the house that I had lived in at the time was only $200,000. So the car that I was pulling into the garage cost more than the house. So I'm really like out of whack right now. So I've made way better decisions than that since then. But yeah, that was kind of my one purchase that I had to like, you know, get out of my system. And I did.
It's a hell of a salesman.
I'm good.
Do you ever wish your advisor had told you no in that scenario, or you needed to buy that car?
No, I needed to. And I think you've got to let them have fun. Right. You've got to let them have fun. There's got to be a plan, though. So there was a plan in place. And I looked at the plan and I said, if I did spend this, the truth of the matter was that I can't buy another one. I can't buy two of them at the same time. Now I'm really hurting my plan. So you can have fun, but there's got to be a plan in place for us to have fun. And I think as financial advisors, you've got to include fun in the game plan. It can't just be savings and investments and stocks and bonds and, you know, estate planning. And there's no fun in that. Like, what have I done all of this hard work? And my advisor is telling me that I've got to throw everything into, you know, this investment vehicle. Like, who does that? Right. So you've got to have some fun and you got to plan for fun in the financial plan. So I would say, no, I don't regret it. I was single at the time. It got me a lot of attention. Bless me. I enjoyed it, man. It was a good time.
Was it everything you thought it was going to be when you drove away the first time?
It was. You know what's shocking, though, is when I did go to resell it, the value. I mean, it's like, but as soon as you walk out the door with it, it like drops by half, which is crazy. So very, wouldn't advise anyone buying, you know, depreciating asset like that is. But again, like I said, it was a one-time thing, won't do it again, and didn't do it again. And I actually saved the rest of all my money for the next 6 years that I was playing for the Bears. So I did pretty good with my cash.
So maybe buy the dream house over the dream car, yeah, the thing that goes up, not down.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Right. And the good thing about it is, even though it was a $200,000 house that I had, it wasn't appreciating value. So, you know, I was doing okay. I was, you know, you win some, you lose some. But if you have a good plan, you'll win more than you lose.
That's financial literacy right there, right? It doesn't really matter the investment or the vehicle, no pun intended, on the other side of it. But hey, right? Cars, depreciating asset, homes, the opposite.
For today's young athlete, what should they look for when assembling a team, right? What pieces do they need to paint the whole picture?
Yeah, great question. I think first and foremost, use the internet for your advantage. Run background checks, all right? Make sure that your advisors and your people, their background check matches the things that they're telling you. And I think that's a benefit that I didn't have as an athlete when I played. I had to actually go through the NFL, and the NFL went through a background check with the FBI and all those different things. Now all you have to do is Google someone's name, right? And you'll see all of the any scandals or any issues that they may have. So I'd use the internet for your to your advantage. But then ultimately, you know, use common sense in getting to know who these people are. Understand that everybody in your circle is trying to benefit from your hard work and determination, which has turned into hopefully millions of dollars. And it's not wrong to pay experts like a financial advisor, a lawyer, a CPA. Like, you know, they went to school too, and they deserve to be paid for their services. Make sure you're paying the right person, right? And make sure that, I think at the end of the day, they're not dependent on solely you to pay their bills, right? If you're the only person that they're working with, you're their make it or break it client. I don't know now is the time for you to actually engage with that advisor. I think you tell that advisor, hey, listen, I appreciate your hard work and dedication, but where I'm at in my career, I actually need somebody a little bit more with a little more experience. And I know that sucks to hear for a lot of younger advisors, but for me, there's too much at stake with athletes, right? They get one shot at a big contract. And I don't think they should be risking it on advisors that don't understand where they come from, are not at reputable firms, and don't have a squeaky clean background. And right there, if you start from those three fundamental basic foundational attributes, I think you're off to a good start. And separate family and business. I see way too many times where athletes get in bed with their family and it doesn't turn out good at all, right? Let mom be mom, a dad be dad, and brothers be brothers and sisters, and you guys all celebrate at holidays and birthdays. You buy everybody a nice gift around those times, and you let your financial advisor make sure that the financial plan is that I want to buy my family gifts during their birthdays instead of having them come on the team. And now we're all broke. So that's kind of my aspect of it. You know, surround yourself with the right people and try your best to separate family and friends. It's just a recipe for disaster.
A lot of the athletes that we deal with are being approached every day with new investment opportunities. You know, they hear the invest with me, I'll double your money in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, what are trends in the industry from athletes that you're hearing that you think they should stay away from? What are the bait opportunities that are just scary and big red flags?
I think the one you just said, like, you know, I'll double your money in 6 months. Like, you've got to stay away from those type of clickbait type of approaches when it comes to your assets. I want athletes to understand that everybody needs your money to make their ideas successful. Right. And I say this, you know, tongue in cheek, but the truth of the matter is they say that this is the next best thing. But all they need is your money to make it work. And I'd be very leery about that, because at the end of the day, there are really some really sophisticated businessmen and women in the world that they could go to, but they're coming to you. And be honest, as an athlete, you're not the most sophisticated businessman and businesswoman in the world. You're going to get there eventually with time and education, but not right now. Early in your career, you probably should just be sitting back learning. And there is a reason why they're not going to that sophisticated businessman or businesswoman, or they probably already have and they've been told, no, it's not happening. So now I feel like they can come to you. And I feel that whatever the trend is when it comes to investing, you'll see it on social media. Like, you know, I'll go into get my hair cut, and my barber will tell me, like, hey, you know, Wale, what do you think about this certain investment? And I'll call my advisor right now and I'm like, listen, if we have anything to do with this, get me out of it. Because once public knowledge starts to reap in and the lady that's doing your nails at the nail salon, or the barber that's, you know, cutting your hair, and they're all talking about the same product, I think it's time. Right. So, you know, we live in a world where people are sheep and they follow, but it is up to the financial advisors, and they do know really what's best, and they tend to understand the financial markets a little bit better. They don't, you know, jump when there's a political change and, you know, in the presidency, or, and there's a different, you know, there's a war going on. They're pretty steady in their approach of what they should do with your finances. Stick with the experts. That's pretty much all I should have said to answer that question. There are going to be a ton of trends. There's some things that are always constant when it comes to economics and finance. The experts understand those things. And a fly-by-night type of investments and opportunities, there are going to be some winners. But just like Ponzi schemes, there's going to be a ton of losers at the end of the day. So be careful with taking advice from people who have no business talking finance.
Wale, one question we like to ask everyone on the podcast is, what does sweat equity mean to you?
Sweat equity is simple for me. It's being an overnight success. And I say this to say, I tell everybody all the time that I'm an overnight success. I did the work every single day. I busted my tail. I took to constructive criticism. I worked hard, I trained, I ate well, I treated people kindly. And one moment, I felt like overnight, but one night, I looked up and all that hard work had, you know, gotten me a nicer house, nicer cars, a beautiful family, you know, two kids, a great second career at UBS. All that happened overnight, but the truth of the matter is, I'm not sure what night it happened, because I was with my head down working every single day. And I think for me, that's what set sweat equity is putting, you know, muscle behind the talent and pushing forward and working hard enough that you're not even seeing your successes until one day you sit back and you look like, wow, I'm actually doing it. I'm actually done it. And so for me, that's kind of, you know, what I look at when I think about sweat equity, is just putting my head down and grinding and then, you know, looking up one day and seeing the fruits of your labor and you're able to enjoy life the right way. So this is it's been a fun ride for me.
Thank you, Wale. This has been so amazing. Thank you for your leadership and thanks for being on the team. I'm so excited to see all the amazing work that you continue to do, helping this next generation get it right.
Thank you so much. And thank you for this platform and having me. Like I said, this is really a great way to connect with people and have real conversations and have real relationships. So thanks for having me and really appreciate it.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.